Welcome to my new podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. And we will be looking at these issues, being able to drill down a bit more than what we do on the Kim Munson Show. So today I am thrilled to be talking with Rob Nadelson. You know him. He is a constitutional scholar, former constitutional law professor, has written the book, The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. He is the senior fellow of constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute. And he has written a really important piece that is just, it's gone viral, and that is Denver's lockdown order probably unconstitutional. And of course, Rob, you had written that before Governor Polis made the lockdown order across the state. So Rob Nadelson, welcome to this podcast.
It's good to be with you, Kim. I'm glad to be discussing this unfortunate state of affairs with you.
Well, I have been so concerned about an overreach of power. Is this constitutional? You're really the guy to talk to about it, and you say that this lockdown is probably unconstitutional. Explain that, Rob Nadelson.
Yeah, let's start with the background. First, the states have a broad power, which the courts call the police power. When I use the word police, I don't mean your local cops. This is an older meaning of the word police to mean governance, a general governance power. In fact, the federal government doesn't have it, except in the District of Columbia and federal territories. Part of that police power has been the ability to respond to emergencies, among them epidemics, by using devices such as quarantines in order to protect the public health. So there is nothing wrong with appropriate responses from the local government in a health crisis or from the state government in a health crisis. Local governments get their power from the state, so they exercise police power as well. The qualification on that, of course, is that they have to honor constitutional rights, including most federal constitutional rights. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that there is a right to travel, a right, sometimes called a right of locomotion, going one place to another, not necessarily in a locomotive, any travel from one place to another. And furthermore, that it's a fundamental right, like the right to free speech or the right to free right to exercise a religion. Now, what that means in terms of how much power the government has in responding to emergencies is that the right to travel can be infringed by a local or a state government, but it can do so only for a what the court says is a compelling governmental purpose, and a response to an epidemic is a compelling governmental purpose. So that's fine. In addition, however, any laws that are enacted have to be, as the court says, narrowly tailored or necessary. What that means is that the laws have to be targeted specifically on the problem. You can't kill an ant with a shotgun. And the difficulty with these lockdown orders constitutionally is that it really is like taking a shotgun and trying to kill an ant with it. They are far too broad for dealing with the problem. They're not only too broad, but in some cases they're too narrow. So because they're not focused on the problem, a court applying Supreme Court precedent should strike them down, requiring the government's, the state government or the local government to refine them more narrowly.
I have been so concerned, Rob Nadelson, with this. You know, the right to travel, the right to move about, is inherent among a free people. And I think that Americans, as I'm talking with people out there, they're like, certainly we want to be careful. We want to be cautious. But what I'm very concerned about is rhetoric that does not seem to have any measure in it. For example, when Mayor Hancock announced that he was going to close down restaurants for 8 weeks, first of all, how do you decide 8 weeks? But that puts the fear of God in all of the restaurant workers and the owners trying to figure out how they're going to make a living. And it seems like a measured response, something along the line of, we're concerned. We don't quite know what this whole virus is. We want to be cautious. So we're going to take a pause for 10 days, 2 weeks. Then we're going to reassess it. I think that this kind of irresponsible rhetoric is contributing significantly to the fear and panic that people may be feeling out there.
Okay, I think there are two important aspects to what you just said. One is the potentially disastrous results of this indiscriminate lockdown. Those results are more than economic. We know that public health is affected by whether the economy is good or bad. We know that when people don't have money, when people can't support their family, that suicides increase, that malnutrition increases, that people are less able to afford health care, and the death rate goes up. So the bureaucratic focus on, or the focus as stated by Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York, we'll do anything we possibly can to save one life, is misplaced, because you can wind up destroying more life than you wind up saving as a result of the economic damage you do. The other point you made is measured response. That's saying in a different way what I just said when I talked about the constitutional issue. And that is, the response must be narrowly tailored. You've got to, any response that infringes a fundamental constitutional right must, not just should be, but must be focused on the problem and commensurate with the problem. Now, let me give you just two examples of what I mean. First, the order is vastly over-inclusive when it purports to prohibit automobile travel. Automobile travel, of course, is relatively safe. The virus doesn't hop from one car to another. So automobile travel to, for example, remote areas or parks outside the jurisdiction, or just on a vacation somewhere else, should be permitted. On the other hand, the exemption of certain activities, even though they could increase the risk of the coronavirus, suggests that certain parts of the order are under-inclusive. For example, just exempting liquor stores at the local level, or exempting pot shops at the local level. There's no reason to exempt those other than political. So the order has been thrown together for various political and bureaucratic reasons, and it is not, in fact, commensurate to the response. Now, add to all of that, and we could discuss this because I don't want to include this in this already very long answer, the fact that the governor's order contradicts the local orders in some respects, and it overrides them in some respects but doesn't override them in others, and you're now piling legal chaos on top of unconstitutionality.
So I am getting the feeling that this is not very well thought out. But yet, I had been talking with Greg Fulton with the Colorado Motor Carriers Association, and he said that that our trucking industry is doing a super job, and the people that are working in our grocery stores and our different stores are doing a great job of putting things on the shelves. But anytime we are getting these orders, it creates somewhat panic buying, and that's what's making it difficult to keep the stores stocked up. He said there's plenty of product out there, but these edicts really are kind of ramping up the concern that people have. And I think that is so irresponsible, Rob.
It is irresponsible. Let me mention the conflicting nature of the edicts in a minute, but I want to deal specifically with the hoarding issue.
Okay.
There is an easy way to deal with hoarding. The stores simply have to let the prices rise. So it costs you $20 for a package of toilet paper. People are going to stop hoarding toilet paper, and only the people who are really desperate for it are going to buy it. Now, why don't the stores do that? They don't do it because then the politicians will accuse them of price gouging. So you've got this political threat interfering with the market's way of responding to hoarding. Now, if the price of toilet paper or a package of 10 rolls of toilet paper were to rise to $20, it wouldn't stay there very long. It would go up, the hoarding would end, and then it would drop again. And that's the way to respond to the hoarding, not by rationing or by denying people things that they need. That's crazy. But that craziness is imposed upon the stores by the political threat that they're going to be charged with price gouging. Now, the other aspect
Rob, since we have time, let's just talk about this a little bit more then. Remember the story several weeks ago about the guys that had purchased all the hand sanitizer and I think toilet paper? And a lot of people, a lot of freedom people that I know, and they wanted, I guess they wanted to sell it on eBay and on Amazon, and Amazon, you know, at a price. And I guess they wouldn't let them. Amazon and eBay would not let them sell those products there.
Right.
And ultimately, I think they were forced to give it away. So, you know, very altruistically to give it away. I actually thought, gosh, what a great entrepreneurial idea. They got out ahead of the curve. They thought they took a risk. They thought, you know what, people may want this product, and so we're going to buy it. And then just what you said, the market would get to a point where people would say, you know what, maybe I'll just use soap and water. And so I know a lot of people thought that, oh my gosh, they were greedy and that was wrong. I actually thought it was kind of entrepreneurial.
Actually, you were economically correct. Those people are engaged in what's called speculation, and speculators have always been the topic, always been the subject of demagogic rhetoric. I mean, speculators are viewed as evil. Speculators actually serve a valuable purpose in evening out markets. It's an economic fact. And if a speculator is asking a price that's too high, you just don't have to buy it, right? You can substitute other goods. But what the speculators do is they even out these shortages. So there's a lot of economic ignorance here. But let me get back to the point of inconsistency, because this is one thing that is radically different from what the news personalities told us. Last night, the news personalities were told us that the governor's order was going to create a unified structure on the entire state that at least would have the advantage, I suppose, of limiting some of the uncertainty. In fact, the governor's office order has done no such thing. The first thing is the governor, like the congressman he used to be, and this congressman do this all the time, he made his public relations splash, and then he passed on all the heavy lifting to the bureaucrats. If you read his order, there's very little of substance there. He simply says, hey, I'm passing this on to the Department of Public Health and Environment. And they're the ones who actually issued the order that matters. It's called Order 2040. Now, when you read that, and you read it in conjunction with the governor's office, you'll see that there are often inconsistencies between the local orders and the statewide ones. If the statewide one is more restrictive, if it regulates you more, you have to follow it. If the local order is more restrictive, you have to follow it. So let's take, for example, the issue of liquor stores. A lot of people who like booze are going to wake up today and they're going to learn, unfortunately, from their point of view, that all those exemptions for liquor stores in the local orders are gone. The state order does not exempt liquor stores. Liquor stores have to close. If you want to buy alcohol, you're going to have to go to your local King Soopers or Safeway or Albertsons and purchase beer. You also find that the state order is more restrictive with respect to marijuana. Marijuana is for recreational marijuana is, for reasons I don't understand, still exempted, but you have to do curbside delivery. Apparently, you can't go into the marijuana shop and, you know, look around. There's got to be curbside delivery now. So there's still a limited exemption, but it's a more limited exemption than that occurs at the local level. There's a statewide order says it's fine to go use the state parks. The state parks will be open. But if you read the order issued by various counties like Denver or Jeffco, what they seem to say is you can't go to a state park that's outside the jurisdiction. You can, if you're in Denver, you can go to Denver parks. That's fine. But apparently, if you read the order carefully, you can't go to Roxborough State Park because it's outside Denver. Presumably, if you live in Douglas County, where much of Roxborough is located, you can go to Roxborough, but not if you live in Denver County. And so this is just a recipe for legal chaos. In addition, even though the Department of Public Health and Environment's order is supposedly issued pursuant to the governor's directive, the governor's directive applies only to Coloradans, and the State Department's order supposedly applies to out-of-staters. So you've got the governor saying, okay, Department of Public Health, issue something for Coloradans, and what comes out of the Department of Public Health applies to out-of-staters as well, including presumably out-of-staters just passing through, which is clearly unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So you add to unconstitutionality this legal chaos. Now, the lesson here, Kim, is this is bureaucracy run wild. This is the administrative state mm-hmm. gone crazy
mm-hmm.
without limitations. Every person who specializes in an area tends to overestimate the importance of his own area. A noted economist once told me, imagine you're an engineer building dams, and you build them for water and for public health and recreation, and you build them for hydroelectric power. You probably think dams are the most important thing in the world and should trump everything else. And the health bureaucrats think that their regulations are more important than anything else and should trump anything else. And what's also notable about the statewide orders is they talk a lot about commands, a lot about imperatives, a lot about mandates, and talk about nothing about easing the burden of government in this emergency.
So, we talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom all the time on the show. And ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And you just had mentioned some of those words, mandate, imperatives. And now that we have seen, I think that people are seeing this bureaucracy run amok, if you will, or out of control. And I think a lot of people that weren't paying attention are saying, wait a minute, I don't think I really like this. I think we're seeing right now what the new Green Deal would do to us and also what socialism does. And so there's a positive that people are paying attention, Rob.
Yes. And one of the things you have to learn is the old adage that when the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Government's hammer is force. And so government likes to use force whenever they get a problem, and they almost always use too much. I mean, we have experience with this in American history. The classic example was locking up 120,000 American citizens of Japanese ancestry during World War II, a grossly excessive use of power. And we all study that, and we say, gee, we'll never do that again, et cetera.
No, we're just going to lock up everybody now.
Yeah, it was just going to lock up everyone, put everyone on house arrest. And it's like every time we look at this thing and we say, well, that could never happen now. Well, congratulations, it just happened.
It did just happen. So, Rob Nadelson, another issue that you have talked about in your very important piece here is interstate commerce. So what's your comments on that?
Well, there's a long line of U.S. Supreme Court decisions that says that states and localities may not unduly burden interstate commerce. And the local orders issued by the various counties appear to do that. They're not entirely clearly written, but they seem to ban shipment of goods other than the mail and things like the mail, like FedEx and UPS. So if they're trying to prevent the shipment of, let's say, furniture through I-25 or I-70, then I think it's pretty clear that those orders are unconstitutional. One of the things, we have to remind our readers is that neither you nor I take this this epidemic lightly. This is a very serious matter. But we're also talking, as you say, about measured response, proportionate response, or, as the U.S. Supreme Court requires, narrowly tailored responses. So, for example, rather than closing down all restaurants, it might be appropriate to require all restaurants to honor certain health restrictions, including social distancing. Or instead of banning all travel, travel to remote areas or to for outdoor activities. So it's those kinds of refinements that are not just a good idea, but they're constitutionally required.
Okay, and then you also mentioned about First Amendment religion clauses. What do you think about that?
Yes. Well, this is interesting. The local orders generally exclude religious congregations from their effect. That raises a constitutional issue because the Supreme Court has held, and I'm not sure how serious they still are about this, but they have taken the position that you can't discriminate against religion, but you also can't discriminate in favor of religion. And so when you exempt churches, that means that that those kinds of assemblies are permitted, but let's say a gathering of humanists would not be permitted. That raises First Amendment issues under the court's jurisprudence. However, the state order abolishes that exemption for churches. So churches can no longer claim an exemption from the stay-at-home order. The only thing exempt now is personal pastoral care. And again, under the governor's directive, when the statewide restriction is more restrictive, it trumps the local exemption. So that's going to cause some confusion as well.
Most certainly. So, Rob Nadelson, we're about out of time. But what should freedom-loving people do? What is our next steps?
Sue. I mean it. I mean, there needs to be a court challenge to this. There needs to be a number of court challenges to it. I think that a preliminary injunction has to be demanded. I also think somewhat more dramatically, maybe a writ of habeas corpus needs to be sought. This emergency needs to be tested in court. The history of emergencies, unfortunately, is that the courts dawdle, and then the emergency is long past, and the government actors get away with it. You know, has happened in a number of previous cases. But I think there needs to be quick action. I think there also needs to be political pressure brought to bear on our elected politicians to overrule the bureaucrats. Again, not with the idea of diminishing appropriate response to the epidemic, but with the goal of keeping their response measured and constitutional.
Well, and you know what, we saw this right in my county, in Douglas County, where the Tri-County Health Director came out and issued a directive, and not in consultation with our county commissioners. And then all of a sudden we realize that we have an unelected, unaccountable bureaucrat that has enormous power over our lives, and we need to reassess that. So an everyday person can't sue. I mean, my gosh, it's so expensive to get an attorney to do that. So how could that be accomplished?
There are everyday people who have the money to bring the suit, okay? There may also be organizations that will support it. I'm not prepared to give detailed litigation advice, but this must be tested in court. Someone needs to step up, and anyone subject to these orders certainly would have standing to sue, I think.
Okay. Then the second thing is we are going to walk through this crisis. A lot of it, I think, is very man-made because there's not been a measured response to that. And when we come out on the other side, first of all of this government power from bureaucrats and politicians that they have taken from the people, we need to demand that we get that back. And then we need be very active as we come into these elections in November of 2020 and beyond, that we are electing people that respect the freedom and liberty of everyday people and their opportunity to go out and thrive and prosper. And when we have politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that are standing in the way of that, it's a gut check. And I think people are paying attention, and we need to be actively out there engaged in that battle of ideas. Rob Nadelson, your final thought?
Well, I would just second what you have to say. In the past, we've tended to say, well, we overreacted in this previous emergency. We won't do that again. Well, we have done it again. And this time we need to remember, and we need to make the reform, ensure that it doesn't happen again.
Okay, Rob Nadelson, thank you so much. Again, that piece is at Complete Colorado on page 2. If you click on the banner ad at the very top, that'll take you to all of this original content. And as Rob Nadelson, Denver's lockdown order probably unconstitutional. I know a lot of people are looking at this piece, Rob. The number of shares is just it's off the charts. So congratulations on this very thoughtful piece.
Thank you. And there'll be another one shortly.
Okay.
Dealing with the inconsistencies between the state and the local orders.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Rob Nadelson.
Okay. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay. And you can be sure and find this podcast at my website at kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Be sure and like us on Facebook. And God bless you and God bless America.